Oh, hi, podcast listeners. There's many ways you can listen to the Real Nerds Podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher Radio. You want to send us a Twitter message? You can do that. It's so easy, at Real Nerds. Like us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. You can visit our website, realnerdspodcast.com, where there'll be a lot of articles for you to not only read, but to listen to our previous shows. Do you like your stories told through pictures? Then you can also follow us at Real Nerds on Instagram. You can also call us, 720-6NERDS5. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Camera, action!
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd
doesn't
can...
Doesn't talk film! I'm sorry.
Take it outside.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd will give it all they got. Lights, camera, action!
Welcome to a very special Real Nerds podcast. We are sitting down with director H. Nelson Tracy, director of the movie Breakup Season. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we're excited to have you. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to see your film. It was lovely.
Thanks.
So let's start with a little bit about you, because when I got your film, I deep dived into your IMDb page, and it seems that you are mostly known as an editor.
Nice. Yeah, that's fun. Oh, wow. Rarely does that ever happen to people actually do their homework. So that's a good start. I'm one of those people. I've always wanted to make movies ever since I was a little kid. And upon graduating college, you know, they don't really hire 23-year-old directors in this day and age, you know, not that they ever really did, but they especially don't now. And so it was sort of a, yep, you know, land on the curb in Los Angeles. Like, what can I do to make a living? And what did I know how to do? I knew how to edit. And so, you know, I started out as a post-production assistant. Got my first job doing that when I was 24. And then that led into assistant editing. And I've built a career doing that, which has now led into more freelance editing on different projects of all scales. And then in terms of directing, it's sort of a trade-off between big projects where I'm the small guy. You know, I've done some Netflix shows and a Hulu show and things like that as an assistant editor, and then small stuff, independent stuff where I get to actually direct. And that's, I'm kind of running on two tracks at this moment and, you know, working towards more of the directing stuff, which is where my heart lies, but you got to pay the bills, as we all know. So yeah.
But it's got to be cool, because I think as an editor, it actually gives you a unique eye as a director, because you're actually seeing rough dailies. And did that help you in formulating what you wanted to do for Breakup Season?
Yeah, it's one of those things that I didn't really even think about, but my actors called it out on me, because we only had 3 weeks to shoot this film, which
wow.
is no time at all. 15 days of principal photography, and then a little bit of extra time for B-roll and like the Christmas photography and all that.
Holy cow.
But days on set with actors, 15 days, no time at all. And so my first assistant director, Steven, who's also the producer, was like, you need to be really concise with your shot choices. You don't have time to cover every scene the way a Hollywood movie would. And so I had to edit the movie in my head ahead of time by choosing very selectively. And certain scenes are one shot scenes as a result. And then, you know, I would to be talking through stuff, and I'd be like, okay, now we're going to hard cut here and then go there. And so I definitely think it informed me, and I don't think I could have done it at the scale or budget I'm on if I weren't equipped with that editing knowledge of knowing how to make my days really tight, and then only shooting stuff that I actually was going to use, not just shooting every single angle. And Chandler, who has a longstanding career, you know, he's used to TV where they have a big budget and the directors have nothing to do with the editing. And he was quite impressed, because he's used to it just being like, let's just shoot every angle we can and throw it to the editors. They'll figure it out. Whereas I was like, nope, okay, this is where we're going to, you know, we're in the kitchen for this moment, and then we're going to hard cut to Gordon on the couch, and then we're going to go back here. You know, I knew all the different stuff that I wanted as best I could. And then for certain scenes, Like there's a dinner table scene. I shot everything for that because I knew I was going to use a ton of angles. But in a lot of scenes, as an editor, I knew I needed to be really precise, and that did allow me to be a better director for sure.
So you because you also have an interesting role too, because you also wrote the film.
I did, yes.
So you wrote, directed, and edited. Do those clash constantly as a writer? Because writers are very precious of their words, but as an editor, sometimes they know that that can't stay there. And as a director, you're trying to get the shot. So how do you balance all three hats and everything you want in at this specific scene or in the whole movie, I guess?
That's also a really good question. And I guess it's like phases of the project, right? So, I spent about a year prior to shooting where it's just, me and in the time I have alone with a screenplay software on my computer, figuring it all out and then getting feedback from friends and all that. And that's the stage where you can really throw anything at the wall because you're not spending any money yet, right? So, you can figure all that out and rewrite and do drafts, and I wrote six drafts of the screenplay in that amount of time. And then it's sort of like take that hat off, put on the next hat, and now it's like, okay, let's analyze this as a director and close my eyes and figure out how to show the different stuff I wanted to do. And of course, in the writing, I wrote stuff that I knew somewhat how to direct. It wasn't like I was writing completely off of it. There were some times where it'd be like hard, like jump to the next thing, and I knew how I was going to do that. Editing, interestingly, I thought was going to be the easiest part because I was like, oh, I'm an editor, this is going to be my safe space, right? But quite the opposite. Editing was, I think, the hardest part of it all, if you can believe it, because on set, if it's not quite working, you have 20 other people. You can be like, is this working? You kind of weigh it with each other. Editing is a lot of time alone in front of my computer, or me and one other person in front of the computer. And figuring out if it actually works when you've seen it 100 times and does it actually work. The original rough cut was 2 hours, 2 minutes long, and the final cut is 1 hour 42. So we eliminated 20 full minutes of the film. What's crazy is, and that's the script, it just played out a lot longer. The script was 98 pages. Now, this is the fun part. They say in screenwriting, 1 page equals 1 minute of screen time. Somehow I cut, like scenes played longer, so that started longer. However, if you pause the movie right when the credits start, it's 98 minutes long. It's wild. The thing works. So if you're writing, trust that that number is pretty accurate. Because I did cut scenes. I had a few scenes that I had a scene with just Liz, the daughter, and Mia, the mom, just the two of them. And it just was kind of a slow, it didn't really propel the story forward. And on paper, it was great character development, but the actors were doing enough of that without the scene. It wasn't either of their best work. And everyone wanted to keep going with the breakup story. So I figured that out in the edit that it was slowing the movie down. So I enjoy all three of those stages. I mean, they're all very different skill sets or whatever. And I think if I had to pick one, I would pick directing. I think that's the most satisfying, but definitely the writing and the editing are kind of the same cloth, and they inform that for sure.
That's so cool. And you mentioned Chandler Riggs, and I mean, we all know him from Walking Dead. And I remember meeting him at a Comic-Con years ago, and he was still a little boy.
Oh, wow.
And how he transitioned to being like a young man actor is nothing short of astounding. Because I mean, I don't want to reveal too many spoilers of the movie, but I mean, it is called Breakup Season, so we know
Sure, we know
something's going to
that.
happen.
Yeah.
But he carries the film in a way that is so sympathetic, but at the same time, as you watch it, you go, dude, what are you doing? Like it's, but I also think it's a tribute to the script you wrote, because as I'm watching it, I don't know if I want them to work it
To
out
work
or
out.
I want them to stay
Yeah.
not together. And the uncomfortableness of the film, I think, is really cool.
Thank you. Wow. I mean, those are really high praise marks. So I really appreciate that. And but to speaking to Chandler, yeah, he's a stellar guy, and he came aboard very late in the process. We had Samantha in the film, and her audition tape was just fire, and it was so good that I was watching all these 23-year-olds who just couldn't hang with her, and it was like, we can't put Samantha next to an amateur. It just like, it's going to, the whole movie's not going to work. And so we were like, well, let's aim a little higher and let's go to the next rung up in terms of what we thought we could do casting. My casting ambitions were really modest. I thought I was going to be like a lot of local Oregon actors, you know, that was
like your friends.
Yeah. I mean, one step above my friends, but you know, yeah. just about honestly, I mean, it's an indie yeah. movie, but you know, Chandler, we were able to send him the script and he really connected with it because he never gets offered just romantic movies. You know, he gets offered zombie sci-fi stuff all day long and he's done enough of that, obviously, you know? And so for him, it was an exciting role and he liked the script. And that's, I think the best advice I can give to anyone is just like write stuff that's interesting to actors and you'll be surprised, you know, and don't, it wasn't like I was like obsessed with Chandler for the role. It was like, we have these dates set. We're making this movie February X to X. Are you interested? And he was available. If we had been 1 week off, he was busy. Like truly, you have to believe in the film gods, in miracles. So many things went right for this movie. And Chandler, we booked him with a week to go. And it was just like, okay, now we have a real cast. Like he was sort of the last piece of that great ensemble cast. And, you know, I couldn't imagine it any other way.
Yeah, you know, and with Chandler real quick, before we get to Samantha, you know, I love this scenes. And I mean, saying words is always great, but as an actor, there's a couple scenes in it where he's alone and the way you frame the shot, whether it's far away from him and he's like in the foyer or just at the bottom of the stairs.
Yeah.
It makes it like, I don't want to say uncomfortable in a bad way, but it's uncomfortable because he's in a no-win situation with he's, you know, dealing with his mom or his brother and his dad and his girlfriend. And I just thought it was beautiful how he would just sit there and you can feel the weight on him. And I think that's a tribute to a great actor, is because your words are wonderful, but to be alone and you feel his pain, I think is a tribute to him.
Definitely. I mean, a great actor, I cut a lot of dialogue because they were doing it with their eyes and their faces. And that's great. You know, it's like less is more always. And a good actor can convey it all in their visage, you know. And I think there's a scene of him crying in a bathroom and that guy, you know, he would just, I would say action. He would bring the heat and do it. And I'd say cut. And he would look at me completely straight face, like, do you need another one? And just as casual as day, you know, he is someone who has spent a lot of time on set and honed in his dramatic acting skills. That's another difference too, that like, if I had cast someone with a sitcom background or something like that, I think it would have been hard for them to do. But, you know, he's on a show with characters dying all the time and life and death stakes, you know. And so I think he has a dramatic capability that most young men of his ilk don't necessarily have, because there aren't that many people who grew up on a drama.
Yeah. And it's you know, it's his eyes. There's something about how he looks. I looks at, you know, looks at Cassie or something, and it's this heartbreak and his not understanding.
Yeah.
And she's trying really hard to make him understand. And I like I said, it's not really a spoiler that it's a breakup, but how it unfolded.
Yeah.
You know, it's so awkward. And Samantha plays it so well in that scene where she's trying to make it work, but you can see the pain in her face. And the actors are just incredible. And I love those uncomfortable scenes because I want movies to make me feel something.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie made me feel uncomfortable, but it also gave me hope. And it's really great. You know, I don't want to spoil the scene with her, but she's on the phone in one scene and her dialogue is heart-wrenching.
Yes. Yeah. I know she does another actor who does so much with so little, you know, and just, she can do mannerisms with her eyes that say it all and that convey a weight. And yeah, someone else said this and I really appreciate it, that there are no villains in this movie, you know, and
no.
she's not like, yeah, she may instigate these things, but I always talk about in the first 15, 20 minutes, what I called cracks in the dam, right? Like we know, the audience knows the title of the film, so they're looking for that. And we see her challenging and not necessarily sure about this decision. And I've had multiple people, mostly women, come up to me after screenings, be like, I lived that. Like, I went to my ex's family and I needed to go to a far distance or make a big, big decision to stress test my relationship, you know, and or like siblings of mine, you know, like people in my life, my good friends. And, you know, it's not an autobiography, but they're certainly pulled obviously from experiences I had. And so the combination of the melting pot of all these ideas really conveys in what we have.
Yeah, and you know, because you're working on a character piece and it's kind of takes place in one area, the actors have to be at the top of their game. And I, you know, the two actor lead actors are incredible, but I think Jacob as Gordon is one of the like I'm guessing a lot of people love him, because you know he comes. His dinner scene is great when he's calling her out for being a vegetarian. But I particularly liked the dynamic of him fighting with Ben, and but it's a brotherly fight. And then throughout the court runtime of the film, you see the brothers kind of connect. And for a person who you think is lost, sometimes has the most profound things to say. And where did you find him at? Because he's incredible in the film.
Yeah, Jacob is a stellar actor and definitely you know, a crowd favorite. I love hearing, like, he is just a dynamite comedic actor, you know. And what I like about him is he can really do comedy and drama very well. And you know, he's also kind of a rising star. He's got a really great TikTok thing going on right now and just building a great base. I didn't know Jacob prior to this, but my producer actually did, and so my producer suggested him for the part. Jacob has had a pretty cool career. You know, he had a breakout movie at Sundance when he was, I think he was only like 20 years old, a movie called Terry, where he acted against John C. Reilly. And so he's built a really strong indie acting career while also doing UCB comedy and having a more kind of traditional comedy improv route. So he's a really versatile person. And, you know, he didn't, he read, he was another case where we sent him the script and he connected with it. It was not this type of stuff he usually gets offered. It was a little more dramatic, and it had a little more weight to his character in terms of what he was carrying about and not just like, you know, a punchline character. And so I think that's where he connected with it. So I met with him, over Zoom, and he was just excited about it, had interesting ideas to it. And Gordon was a character on paper who could have gone a lot of different ways. I looked at some like kind of scrawny, like incel type characters for that, like actors for that. And I looked at like kind of like ex jocks, like a, you know, a kid who was like peaked in high school kind of look and all that. And Jacob's neither of those two things, but I think it was an exciting element. And once he was in as Gordon, like it completely expanded the character and made it really interesting. And yeah, I love seeing him act and I love seeing people discover him in this movie.
Because it is great because, you know, the movie has a lot of tension in it. And he sometimes is a source of it, but he's also the relief of the tension. Because it's not just that he's funny, but he's also so profound at some points. And then as you think back in my life, I mean, I've been married forever now, but when I was younger, and you did think when your girlfriend broke up with you is the end of the world, and what do you need to do? And I think, I don't know if he's a Cylon from wherever, but you just feel like if I had that person in my life when I was going through stuff, maybe I'd be okay, you know?
Well, you say that, but it's like, I think that's what's fun about it is like Ben is not listening to him at all, you know, and Jacob, it almost isn't even listening to his own advice, you know, and it's like, I think I knew I had a good structure when it's like he's older and he's been through this. And so we're seeing a breakup at multiple stages. And by being years removed from it, I could put in some of the more wisdom that comes from, you know, time that you're, you know, 5 years out from a breakup versus a day out from a breakup in Ben's, you know, and so that I like that back and forth between the two of them, you know, and those struggles.
It was great. You also mentioned that it isn't autobiographical, but it seems such like a personal story when you watch it. Where did the idea come from then, if it's not autobiographical?
I think over a decade ago, my sister had some funny anecdote that a friend of hers had a brother who brought his girlfriend home for Christmas, and then they broke up and was stuck with it. And I don't even know who the person was, and my sister doesn't even remember either, but it was such a funny concept. I was like, that could be a great movie. And so I kicked it around in the back of my head for a long time, especially as a great first feature, right? This is my first feature and it's contained. It's not a movie that requires a cast of thousands or a period piece, you know? And then I started writing it as kind of a more romp holiday movie, like what we see fed to us every December. And breakups are not very funny. I've had really difficult breakups in my 20s, and I hadn't seen a movie do the early 20s breakup justice. And I felt like that was something that my friends and I connected on a lot. And it was something we talked about a lot as a really formative kind of coming of age moment in my life, where you're out of college, so is some the person you're dating, but you're neither of you is on steady ground. And so you're trying to land on your own 2 feet while being with someone else who's trying to land on their own 2 feet. And that combination's really hard to weather and make it through. And so once I have an aha moment of like, okay, I need to write this as a drama first, comedy second, then it started to cook. And ironically, the movie has some humor in it, but I needed to frame it as a drama first, you know, akin to a movie like Lady Bird, which I love, or movies like that, which are the characters, it's funny to us, but to the characters, it's all drama, you know, and we find humor in it because life is funny. But, you know, the dramatic framing really helped me get it to where it needed to be. And it was the movie that everyone connected with. I would tell people about it and they would talk about it. And that's what you want, is a movie that people can relate to.
Absolutely. And that's interesting. So did the comedy come first, or did the drama come first? Because you said you framed it in a drama, but then you wanted to do a romp first. So
was it's funny, because I think on paper, I wrote it as a more like hilarity ensues. They're stuck together for Christmas, you know?
Yeah.
And that was just getting nowhere. I was just dead ending it. I have a draft of that from like 5 years ago that's just like less than a page long, you know, like just a outline, and just was getting nowhere because I was writing something that wasn't sincere to my experience, you know? And then I've reframed it. Like, I was like, well, if I was in that situation, it wouldn't be funny to me, you know, it'd be tragic. And so it's like, let's write it that way. And let's take the breakup very seriously, which we do. And, you know, and it's fun to see it in an audience because you feel the humor just go away for that long.
Yeah.
It's a long scene. And I knew it was going to be a long scene from the get-go. And, you know, the title is in the movie. So it's like, we know it's coming, and we were going to take that scene seriously and not wink at the camera in any way with that. And the humor comes after it. So I always, with the actors in particular, I wanted them to not, even with Jacob and James and Liz and Carly, you know, who are obviously, they all do comedy in the movie, but like, we're taking the situation seriously, you know, and that framed the choices.
Yeah, 100%, because you even have, it's interesting too, because even the characters in the family kind of discover themselves in a different way throughout the film, whether it's Liz, you know, talking with Cassie and kind of this idealized version of her relationship and how they work through that. And I think it makes it so relatable to everybody, because everybody has, you know, a brother or a sister that's the goofy one or the one that's super serious. And when you come together at holidays, it's always the, you know, the fighting, and but not in a mean way. It's always really fun.
Yes.
And that's what I think is captured really well too.
Yeah, we talked a lot about that, especially with Liz, the younger sister, and the kind of bickering that happens when you're with your family, and how you kind of, even though she's 19, like you kind of go back to your 12-year-old self because you're with your brother and your child at home again, and the kind of, you know, the little bit of back and forth they have, and the kind of how, you know, you're stuck between being an immature kid and a worldly adult college, you know, co-ed, you know, and that combinations. And so she gets to have a lot of fun in between those two worlds.
Yeah. I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the music choices.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Because the music is so cool. It has a singer at the right point, but also just the little guitar plucks and stuff throughout it. It just sets the mood perfectly. And how did you decide? Did you help frame the music? Was that part of your overall vision as well, or did someone come along and kind of help you guide you through that?
Yeah. Oh, I love talking the music, because I feel like I just get to like shout my enthusiasm for all the people who worked on the music. I will start by saying this. Le Grand is a place with a great music world. It has a venue called HQ, which is halfway between Portland and Boise. So it's a great stopover. If you're on a road, tour, you can play in Le Grand and get 3 nights of shows instead of 2 nights and shows with the same amount of drive, you know? And so, Chris Jennings, who's a producer on the film, also plays, Leonard, the driver at the beginning of the film. He's from Le Grand. He was the kind of our local liaison essentially. And he has a lot of relationships with artists. So almost all of the songs in the movie are from bands from either Oregon or Idaho. And so it's really, there's a Pacific Northwest twang that I always talked about, you know, it's more string based and it's not as percussion or piano based. And the musicians in this movie, there are two original songs that they're both, one's the credit song and one's toward the end of the film. And that's from a band from Le Grand called Bag of Hammers. And they rock. And I heard them live and I was like, whatever I can do, I'd love to have you guys do a song for the movie. And then the Christmas Eve song is by an artist, Katie Buxton, who's from Sun Valley, Idaho. And I met her at a backyard music festival and she rocked. And so, you know, I got to know her music. So that the songs all came about with the goal of trying to showcase the geography and lean into the location. And the music really does capture that. For score, the composer is named David Stahl, and he has a lot of great credits as like an additional composer, and this was his first time doing a leading composing on a feature film. So like he worked on The Queen's Gambit, for example, but he was an additional composer. And so you kind of, just like Chandler and these other people, like you find people who want to take a leap in their careers, and on an indie movie, they're able to do so. I framed it up with him. There's a movie, Brokeback Mountain, that captures Wyoming really well. And it's almost all through the music and the location, or the photography of the location. And so we talked about that movie a lot as a musical point of reference. It won the Oscar that year for best original score. It's perhaps my favorite music score in a movie because it tells so much of the story just by audio matched with great locations. And I knew, obviously, this movie's location is really central to the story, and the music complements that. And so that was sort of how I guided it, was, you know, using that way.
So when you edit, though, too, because I feel I could be wrong because I'm just a person watching the film and not like in the trenches, but it seems like the strings were also a break for you as a person watching the film, because you would do those establishing shots of the town, of the home, and then you could just hear the guitars plucking, and it felt like it was almost a break from the being uncomfortable with the breakup. It was that on purpose, or is it just something I felt when I was watching it?
No, totally. I mean, you'll notice there's very little music in the breakup scene, for example, because I think that the music is a relief when it comes in, you know, and it's a way to catch your breath, and you need that in movies, you know. It's not, and I knew I wanted some of that. So I was very aware of the rhythm of when it came in and what scenes didn't require music at all. And so I definitely was mindful of that. And that's the director composer conversations are some of the best. They're really fun. And we get to kind of look at that and shape it and be like, you know, it's coming in too early, like cut out eight beats there, you know, or whatever you need to do. And so, yeah.
Are you musically inclined? Cause it seems the movies relies on it so much that it seems like you would be.
That's very gracious of you to say, but no, I mean, I can like play a couple of things on the piano, but I barely, you know. It's like, I would not call myself, you know, my mom is a pianist, or like she plays the piano. And so I grew up hearing her play the piano and being exposed to a lot of classical music, but it would be generous to say I have any musical background.
You just know what sounds good. And
yeah. I mean, I love movies, you know, and yeah. Score, and you know, I love anything from, you know, John Williams to Trent Reznor to, you know, you name it. And I can talk about the ways music, if you love movies, you have to love music too, and what it can do to shape a movie and or TV, but let's talk in movies, you know. So yeah,
I agree, and that's why I think it's weaved in so beautifully in the film, because it's never overbearing, which I think too, you know, again, just me talking, but as I watch the film, nothing seems overbearing. It's, you mentioned the breakup scene too. And yeah, it has to be long, because I think you want to be in that moment and be the Ben character where you can't escape. And I think that's, as an editor and a director, I think that's where you come together perfectly, because it works so well.
Thank you. Thank you. That's awesome. Yeah.
So tell me how people will start seeing this film, because I know it's coming up in some festivals and it's rolling out.
Yes. So the movie's entirely independent, meaning, you know, we produced it without distribution set up. You know, it's kind of the old fashioned way of independent movies, where you build the distribution based on the quality of the film. We have a built-in deadline, right? Because it's a Christmas movie. And so I can't say exactly the plans, but I can guarantee by Christmas Day 2024, you will be able to access this movie at home anywhere in the United States. And so that we're confirming the exact details, so I'm not able to announce what they are. But in the meantime, we are doing the film festival circuit, and it's kind of like a traveling band, you know? So we were just in Denver, which is how I came across, or you guys came across it. Denver's my hometown, so we had some urgency to do it there because of the Esquire Theater's closure, which is a topic for another day and not a pleasant one. But otherwise, I'm going to be in Tulsa next, which is Samantha Isler's hometown, so they're pulling out a lot of stops for her, and then Waco, Texas. And just, if you go to breakupseasonmovie.com, we're really good about keeping up to date, and, you know, we've got over a dozen film festivals lined up for the fall. And then November, December, it will have limited theater releases. So I'm looking to come back to Denver in that window of time for a, you know, theatrical release ahead of the at-home release, so that, you know, we did a lot of work to prepare it for theaters. And so I want people to get to see it in theaters however they can, but I'm also aware it's an indie. So, you know, I'm not gonna be able to do 4,000 screenings, you know, on December 25th or anything like that.
Well, Tulsa should be very proud of Samantha, because she's wonderful in it. I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to see it. Yes. It was a great film. And I'm not just saying that because you're here. it's because I truly believe it. And I hope everybody sees it and takes something from it. You're very gracious with your time. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. I mean, look, it goes right back at you. You know, it's like, I want people to see it who love movies. You know, I'm someone, first and foremost, I love movies. And this, you know, talking about it with people who see the details and can notice the music and all that, like, that's the people I want to see it at. And that's where, like, starting with film festivals is great, because you have people who already care about that stuff, you know, and then it'll trickle out and make it wider. So yeah, just keeping up with it. And yeah, to anyone listening, I, you know, just keep up with us, and we will be out soon enough. It'll be here before we know it. But yeah, thank you for your time too. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Nelson, thank you so much.
Yes.
Have a good day.
Thanks.
And yeah, again, thank you so much.
Yeah, you too. Thanks. A real nerd knows who shot a real nerd. Can follow the plot and a real nerd. We'll give it all the gods. Lights, camera, action.
Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. Twitter and Instagram, at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bolognium for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it!